Prasthite tu vanam pitra.
Prasthite tu vanam pitra.
Tatva gam dhamma samshaya.
Tatva gam dhamma samshaya.
Shatrim shadvashat sahasram.
Shatrim shadvashat
sahasram. Rakshitavya hatendriya.
Rakshitavya hatendriya.
Prasthite.
Prasthite.
After departure.
To
Vanam,
to the forest.
Pitra,
by your father.
Tatva, awarding. Gam,
the whole world.
Dhamma samshaya,
under the protection of piety.
Kshatrim shat,
36.
Vasha,
years.
Sahasram,
1,000.
Rakshita,
you will rule
the senses.
Translation and purport
by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. After your father goes to the forest and awards you the rule of his kingdom, you will rule continuously the entire world for 36,000 years, and all your senses will continue to be as strong as they are now. You will never become old. Translation responsibly. After your father goes to the forest and awards you the rule of his kingdom, you will rule continuously the entire world
for
36,000
years.
And all your senses will continue to be
as strong as they are now.
You will never become old.
Purport.
All 2.5 lines of purport. In the Satya Yuga, people generally lived for 100,000 years. Dhruva Maharaj's ruling the world for 36,000 years was quite possible in those days. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasai Bhutale Srimati Pallad Nanda Swami Tinamane. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasai Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamane. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharane. Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschata Deshatane. The verse again. Prasthite tu vanam pitra. Tatvagam dhamma samshaya. Kshatrim shad vasha sahasram. Rakshitavyaha hatendriya. After your father goes to the forest and awards you the rule of his kingdom, you will rule continuously the entire world for 36,000 years, and all your senses will continue to be as strong as they are now. You will never become old. So who spoke this verse? Yes, Lord Krishna. So Krishna is speaking to Dhruva Maharaj. After Dhruva Maharaj has recited his very deep prayers and he's about to explain to him, he's explaining the benedictions that he's going to award him. I was hearing hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. We hear Srimad Bhagavatam. So, firstly, we bring our bodies to the class or hearing at home. And then we need to bring our minds to the class by neglecting whatever thoughts are arising in the mind, that I don't like the speaker, I like this speaker, why is this person acting, doing that, distracting everyone, why? All these things that are going on in our mind we have to neglect. And then bring our intelligence to the hearing, how we can apply our mind and how we can enter into the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Srimad Bhagavatam, I was hearing, it's not just like an ordinary book that says words on the page and some stories, but actually by approaching Srimad Bhagavatam in the correct way, and reading in the proper mood, then actually it becomes an experience. So this is generally what, you know, movie makers and book writers are trying to get people to do, like, but in a material sense, that they become absorbed and enter into the, you know, whatever material lila that they're describing. But the same thing with the Srimad Bhagavatam, but then it's spiritual and it's purifying. So when we can, and that's when the real taste for the literatures arises in us. When we can try to think about what's happening in the past time, and that requires the previous steps of using our body, mind, intelligence to hear. So that was just something I was hearing this morning, actually. So it's a nice meditation, because we kind of, you might just think another day, another class, or, you know, there's different ways of hearing the Bhagavatam. You might just be here, and it's good because there's a reward at the end. It's usually breakfast time at the end, so like, there's some, like when you're training animals, you give them some reward. Good, you know, sit, good. and then we can, you know, and then we want to understand, and or we might get some knowledge that we can recite. So that we can give a class and not look silly. But actually, the highest or the best is if we can study Srimad Bhagavatam, trying to have this experience of it for the self. So, because this is our, what it's describing is actually our constitutional position of eternal loving service to Krishna. So if we can experience that, then that's that high taste. So in today's verse there's some discussion or references to time. Dhruva Maharaj was ruling that he was being told by Vishnu he will rule the planet for 36,000 years. So we get a different perspective on time from Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is very important, because we generally, we're trapped in our, just this life and this immediate, what's going on in our life, and we lose sight of a higher perspective. So, you know, there's many pastimes and descriptions that help us to expand our vision of time, to see that this life is very, very short, actually, very insignificant. Just like we would see the life of an ant or any insect as very insignificant, like the you know, insects that are born at night time and have their whole material lila over the span of the night, have their family, they grow up, and they meet a partner, and they have a family, and then they're dead by the morning. Seems very insignificant to us, but to them, or, you know, to the ants, then it's very urgent. You know, they're rushing here and there to try and fulfill their desires. But there's a story in Canto 9 of Kudumbi Maharaj, who went to Lord Brahma's planet to inquire about a husband for his daughter Revati. But when Kudumbi Maharaj got there, then Lord Brahma was hearing some music from some Gandharva. So, hang on a minute, I can't meet you just yet. So then, when the musical performance was over, then Lord Brahma said, "Okay, so what is it you want?" And Kudumbi Maharaj said, "He wants a husband for his daughter." Lord Brahma laughed very loudly. He said, "All the people in your dynasty, all the people that you might have hoped would be your son-in-law, have long ago passed away. and all their descendants too. And you can't even hear about them anymore. There's no record of them. You know, they're that far gone into history, into the past. So that was, he said, you know, 27 Mahayugas have already passed in the time that you've been here. Mahayuga being four of the yugas together. So 27 are already gone. And in this, you know, few moments. So, but he said, it's okay, you know, you can go back to the earth planet and Lord Baladev will be there. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's happens to have his pastimes there now. So you can, your daughter is suitable to be offered to Lord Baladev in charity. So that was a nice arrangement that Lord Krishna made. And so when Maharaj Kudumbi went back to his palace, it was all deserted. Everyone, his sons and everyone had left, abandoned the palace, and there was, you know, yakshas ruling, you know, ruling the earth. So like that, just a few moments in the heavenly planets in Lord Brahma's time is like, you know, thousands and thousands and millions of years of our time. But is it like a few, you know, a few seconds of his time is like thousands of years of our time. So this is important to have a perspective on our life. We're so, due to the false ego, we're so absorbed in our material life, and you know, everything's so urgent, and but we've had millions of lives already, and they're all just the same activities, trying to, you know, struggle for existence in the material world. But so instead of this, we need to develop a vision for our life, and this requires some contemplation, some introspection. You know, how old am I now? Where am I going in life? And what do I want in Krishna consciousness? So we can, this is trying to envision what are some spiritual desires that I can have. And this is, we develop this through association with the Shastra and with other devotees, how they're living, to understand what sort of life we could have, what sort of spiritual life we can imagine for ourselves. And, you know, it might be like, okay, we have a goal or a desire to wake up early every day, and so that will be good for our Krishna consciousness. And basically, as Bhagavatam says, Ante Narayana, Narayana Smriti. So we want to have a life so that at the end of our life we can remember Lord Narayana, Krishna. And Prabhupada writes in several places, including in that purport, is a quote that life should be moulded in such a manner that one is able to progressively remember the personality of Godhead in every step of life. So the remembrance of Krishna is a progressive building up, just like athletes work out and build up to develop their stamina and endurance and strength and everything. So we're training ourselves to remember Krishna more and more frequently and more deeply. And so it's very important. Also, Krishna, Prabhupada says in purport to 1865 of Bhagavad Gita, the quote from the purport, life should be so moulded that one will always have the chance to think of Krishna. One should always act in such a way that all his daily activities are in connection with Krishna. He should arrange his life in such a way that throughout the 24 hours he cannot but think of Krishna. And the Lord's promise is that anyone who is in such pure Krishna consciousness will certainly return to the abode of Krishna We will be engaged in the association of Krishna face to face. This most confidential part of knowledge is spoken to Arjuna because he is a dear friend of Krishna. Everyone who follows the path of Arjuna can become a dear friend to Krishna and obtain the same perfection as Arjuna. So it's important to note that we're responsible for arranging our own life in such a way that we can remember Krishna. So there are certain activities that are, you know, favourable, and other activities that we know are not favourable. Just like I was talking with one devotee recently about, you know, technology, and it's very pervasive, I guess you could say, in our society nowadays. But a lot of the time it's not favourable to Krishna consciousness. It actually, it's a great avenue, a great gateway into Maya. Like the internet, whatever's out there. So actually it requires a lot of maturity and responsibility in Krishna consciousness to know how to appropriately utilise different technology, even cars or mobile phones and everything. And I was remembering this pastime with Srila Prabhupada, where devotees got him maybe it was in LA, and the devotees got Prabhupada a phone for his room. This is when just the ordinary landline telephone was coming into existence. And Prabhupada rejected it. He said, "No, I don't want this phone." And devotees would just talk for Jalpa and, you know, ring him up, say, you know, "Hello, Prabhupada." And, you know, say, "Yes, what do you want?" But there's no purpose to it. So just for the, you know, thrill of having the technology. And, you know, it can get people into a lot of trouble. You know, principles that we follow is no gambling. And now gambling is just very, very available to people through these unlimited apps for gambling. And there's huge billboards on the freeways for these different apps. And it just, people get, you know, this, if devotees may not be strong in their Krishna consciousness, they can get pulled into such such things, and it's, you know, very detrimental to their Krishna consciousness. So to actually know how to, you know, we talk about yukta vairagya, utilizing things in Krishna's service, but it's not something that every devotee is qualified to do with every technology or whatever. Requires, you know, guidance. And you see devotees who are mature in the Krishna consciousness and who are very fixed up, they know how to use the best kind of technology that we use is that enhance or allow us to more easily hear. So like we have the portable speakers and so on, they're very good for hearing classes and so on. So this kind of thing is very valuable for, you know, can be used very nicely in Krishna consciousness. And you see devotees who are more mature, they'll, you know, they might have a phone or something, but they'll use it for a specific purpose in their service, and then they'll put it away and, you know, not get into so many other opportunities for falling into Maya. So that's something that, you know, I think probably is more understood in the early days of Krishna consciousness. How devotees were very just full time living at the temple and very much fully engaged in Krishna consciousness. And so nowadays there's much more opportunity for getting distracted by many things. So we're trying to make Krishna consciousness the centre of our existence. And because we understand from the Shastra that this is actually the reality, in the spiritual world that's all that's going on, is exchanging different rasas with Krishna, different emotions and you know, unlimited bliss. That's everything is centered around Krishna in the spiritual world. So that's the reality. It's not like we have to think that centering our life around Krishna or God is like fanatic or you know, too, you know, it's too strict and something like that, but actually it gives the highest happiness, which is what everyone's looking for. So this is our responsibility to mould our life and, you know, really think deeply and analyse and always making adjustments. You know, how is my Krishna consciousness going? Where can I improve? And because I was thinking, you know, recently that after some time practicing Krishna consciousness, you might start thinking, well, I'm doing everything and so what's next? But actually the process of Krishna consciousness is Shravanam Kirtanam. It's a watering the seed, watering the kripa of bhakti, of devotion. So that's a daily process of just watering and cultivating, maintaining that bhakti kripa. And if we, you know, get distracted by Maya and think that that's, you know, boring or something, then the weeds will start growing up. But once we become, you know, established in our, you know, we're not a new devotee anymore, but we understand some of the philosophy, or at least theoretically, and we understand what is the process, then we have to get good at just applying that very regularly on a daily basis. The constant watering, always hearing about Krishna. You know, that's one challenge that might be there if devotees are, after some years, they think, oh, what's next? But actually it's just reinforcing and consolidating. That's a word they used to use in our school reports, that, you know, we're learning the knowledge in the school, but then you have to consolidate and keep applying that knowledge regularly. So one quality that is beneficial to cultivating that Krishna consciousness regularly is simplicity and also satisfaction. So what is this simplicity? Devotees, it means, doesn't mean stupidity. And it doesn't even, also it doesn't mean poverty. So there's, might mistake these things for simplicity. But actually, simplicity is closer to purity, and it means it's a singleness of purpose in our life. So that a devotee, because everything is for Krishna's pleasure, because everyone has their destined allotment in life. Everyone has their previous karma, material karma. So even amongst devotees who have more wealth than other devotees, but that's not the you know, important factor. The important factor is how devotees are using everything they have, whatever it is, in Krishna's service. And this is explained in Isha-Upanishad, the first verse. Ishavasyam iram sarvam yakincha jagatyam jagat tena chakrena bunjita magudha kasya svidhanam. So the means chaktena means set apart quota. So everyone has this set apart quota in their in their life. And I was hearing one devotee, you know, saying, how do we know what is our set apart quota? And so this devotee was saying, well, you just look at what's in your life now, and that's pretty much going to be it. Like, you know, we might have, it was kind of like, depending on our profession or whatever, wherever we're placed now is basically about where we're going to stay in life. So we just got to be satisfied with that and see how we can use it in Krishna consciousness, use it in Krishna's service. You know, naturally there'll be differences. I remember as Dave Muni Maharaj was saying, we shouldn't get into this mentality of seeing what's this other devotee got, what's this other devotee got, but you know, just be, say, this is what I have by Krishna's grace. Everything we have is by Lord's mercy. And see, how can I make full use of that by engaging in Krishna's service and thus purify myself and advance in Krishna consciousness? Because it's all going to get taken away anyway. It's not a permanent thing, whatever possessions we have. So that's an interesting purport in the Ishopanishad. There's of course that's the purport with the four defects and do we have a copy of Ishopanishad there? I forgot to bring it over. Sorry. I wanted to read it, but I didn't bring it over. It should be there. Yeah, there's some nice things I wanted to read there. Thank you. So introduction number one. So the Ishopanishad, Prabhupada explains, is in the Yajurveda, one of the four Vedas. And therefore, it contains information concerning the proprietorship of all things existing within the universe. So understanding that everything belongs to Krishna is a first step for devotees. And Prabhupada explains that Krishna's, the Lord's proprietorship over everything, that he owns everything, is explained in Bhagavad Gita, because there's two energies in the material world. There's the para and apara prakriti, or the para. Para means, that means transcendental, right? Yeah. So para is the spiritual energy, which is ourselves, the living force within the body. And the apara, the material elements of eight material elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. So these two energies are both owned by Krishna. Therefore, everything we see within existence is owned by Krishna. And therefore, a devotee never thinks that they own anything. They understand that it's on loan from Krishna, and that their duty is to engage it and use it in Krishna's service. And so this point about have our own quota. So this is like, in today's times, it's like, you know, a very, very controversial statement. But it's just, you know, in Vedic times, it's just the ordinary, you know, nothing spectacular about this. But as an example of things being set aside as the Lord's quota, Prabhupada says that the cow, for instance, gives milk, but she does not drink that milk. She eats grass and straw, and her milk is designated as food for human beings. Oh gosh, it's like if you tell that to a vegan, they're like, shocked. Milk is designated as food for human beings. It's like, was that lynched? but the example is that, you know, the cow, you know, the calf will drink some of the milk, but the calf doesn't need all of the milk. The cow produces excess milk. So why is that? That is the Lord's arrangement, that he has arranged to set a quota for the human beings, because the milk is very nourishing for human beings and we can make so many things from it. Milk sweets and paneer and just by itself. So this is Krishna's arrangement for setting aside something for human beings. And Also, Prabhupada gives the example of our houses that we're so attached to. Or the earth and the stone and the cement. All these things, we cannot produce these things. But in terms of Isha Upanishad, we simply bring these things together and make a construction, make a dwelling. But we cannot make any of these things ourselves. And therefore, Prabhupada says, just like a labourer cannot claim proprietorship over something that he built just because he built it, because he's worked hard. But actually, it belongs to the proprietor of the materials. So the person that engages the labourer owns it. So in the same way, Krishna owns all of the material elements. So just because we build a house doesn't mean we own it. Actually still belongs to Krishna. So this is something nice to meditate on, and what is our quota in life, and how we can engage in Krishna's service. And not be anxious about trying to acquire more and more things. Of course for our families and so on, we need to maintain that, but that's maintenance, that's not increasing. So there's a difference there, that to maintain our life, our quota, then we have to work a certain amount, but not that we're working so much because we're trying to increase our status. And one final point in here, so in the verse it explains that after your father goes to the forest and awards you the rule of his kingdom. So one of Krishna's opulences is renunciation. And we see in his devotees as well that this is reflected. So the Maharaj Uttanapad, Dhruva Maharaj's father, he was, and in those times they were rulers of the whole planet. So at the moment you see some posters for the election for the city council, I think. So people are saying, vote one this person, vote one that person. And just to be the mayor of the city of Melbourne, is like a big achievement, you know, in their estimation, material estimation. So, you know, Melbourne's a city of maybe 4 million people, and so they're striving for this achievement to become the mayor of the city. And then we have the premier of the state, the prime minister of the country. But we can't imagine someone who's ruling the whole planet, every single country, and everyone is subordinate to that person, the emperor. But then at the same time, if we knew of someone like that, that was ruling the whole planet, we might think, oh, they're so attached, they might just be a dictator. You know, if anyone, you know, is ruling that much land, in Kali Yuga we'd think, oh, that's just a dictator. They're like, they just impose themselves on everyone and killed so many people to establish their rule. But actually it wasn't like that. People, the other kings of the world, voluntarily submitted to the rule of the emperor, seeing their good qualities as protectors of the citizens. But then, Maharaj Uttanapad, he goes to the forest. So he goes from extraordinary opulence, ruling the whole planet and having a huge kingdom, just like the Pandavas had so many elephants and animals that you have to maintain, and wives, and subjects, and ministers, and then going from that to basically living like a hermit in the forest. But for what purpose? Was to cultivate Krishna consciousness. So you can imagine in the forest the king living very simply and chanting a lot, just like maybe Babaji's in Vrindavan, if they're bona fide. Chanting many, many rounds every day, and just absorbing himself in remembering Krishna after, you know, giving up the responsibilities of the kingdom. So we see that that would never happen with today's leaders, that they're so opulent. Even after they retire, the rulers, they generally they want to have their say in the politics. They'll give comments in the newspapers and write articles, or, you know, they'll say, "What did this former prime minister have to say about this issue?" And but they've got nothing to do with the politics anymore. They're gone. But they're still, you know, they're still attached. They will never, and they get something, you get like a lifetime pension or something. So they'll never kind of just renounce everything and, you know, practice spiritual life. They're very much, and if they can, they'll try to hang on to their position for as long as possible. No one wants to be disposed from their position. They won't voluntarily leave, as we see with Maharaj Uttanapad. They'll, you know, hang on until they're forced out, like that. So this is, you know, the great character of the kings at that time. And so Prabhupada explains that we might think, oh, you know, from our limited perspective in Kali Yuga, where at most we live 100 years, but that's diminishing as well, that we might think, oh, this is, the material mind might immediately discard it, this is mythology. Someone ruling the planet for 36,000 years, who even lives that long? It's like just some made-up story. But Prabhupada explains that, no, actually, in this Satyayuga, which is the first stage of the cycle, people actually live for 100,000 years. And then it's explained in the progressively shortened standard ages. So, get the two mixed up. Dwarapa and Treta. Dwarapa is next? Yes. Okay. So Dwarapa Yuga people live for 10,000 years. Yeah. And then Treta Yuga live for 1,000 years. And in Kali Yuga live for 100 years. So it's successive shortening of the duration of life. And in each age, as we know, there's a different process for spiritual realization. But in every age, this is the goal in every age, self-realization. But there's just different ways of doing it in every age. And so Satyayuga people meditated. We hear many stories of sages meditating for 60,000 years, but still not being successful. That would be quite disappointing. You meditate for 60,000 years and you see some fish copulating and, you know, you fall down. Like, oh, what a waste of time. So then in the next stage, Dwapara Yuga, the process for self-realization was deity worship. Yes. And then the next one, Treta Yuga, yagya, fire sacrifices. And in Kali Yuga, the process is Nam Sankirtan. So glorifying the name and qualities of Krishna. Name, form, pastimes, qualities of Krishna. Harinama, Harinama, Harinama eva kevalam, kalo nasteva, nasteva, nasteva kitir anita. There's no other method. We do deity worship, and we do a little bit of fire sacrifices occasionally, but that's, as I think it's Jiva Goswami describes, that deity worship is made complete by chanting of the holy name. So we see after the we have Shunga Arati at 7 a.m. and so the Lord's being dressed very nicely by the devotees, and then we glorify Krishna by having kirtan, and this completes the deity worship that was done. We glorify the beautiful form of Krishna in the Arch of Vigraha by having kirtan. So I'll leave it there. see if there's any comments or questions about what we've discussed. Okay, thank you very much. Grantarai Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Nitai Gaur Kamanandi. Thank you.